Thank you for the invitation to talk today. As I was introduced, I currently work as the assistant state veterinarian here in Wyoming. Through my career, I've had the opportunity to work very closely with the bovine tuberculosis eradication program nationwide. How many in the room have ever been to a talk where you've talked about bovine tuberculosis? Don't see many hands up. And that's not surprising, because if you think back in 1913, a little history, earlier than that, when we had a high prevalence of bovine TB in the country, that's when industry, state, and federal governments all got together and said, we need to eradicate this disease. The economic impacts from animals being condemned to slaughter, the public health impacts from people drinking raw milk that was unpasteurized and getting TB, that was the situation at that time. And so basically there's been a long-term, 100 years plus, program to eradicate TB in this country from our cattle populations. And we've basically been extremely successful. Have we completely achieved eradication of the disease? The answer is no. Have we virtually eradicated, meaning really controlled it where you don't hear much about it anymore? The answer is yes. And obviously that's why you don't hear a lot of talks on it. But I guess my mission here today is to really tell you a little bit about bovine TB. What is the disease? What can you do to prevent yourself from getting affected? And also to just give you a little brief information about some of the recent outbreaks we've had, certainly in some South Dakota herds some of you may have heard about. Basically, what is TB? And I'm going to mainly talk about TB in cattle, but basically it's a chronic bacterial disease, which there's mainly three types. There's human TB. There's one that affects avian populations in poultry, and then there's a bovine caused by Mycobacterium bovis. One of the things is, as I mentioned before, it's a zoonotic disease, meaning it can have animal-to-human transmission is possible, and that's the public health concerns. One of the things, though, to keep in mind, it's also what we call a reverse zoonotic disease. Meaning is, a lot of times when we talk about zoonotic diseases you can get from cattle to human. But this disease is reversed, meaning humans can get bovine TB and give it back to their cattle. And that has happened at times. So it can go both ways there. You've often heard that probably TB is slow onset, has a long incubation period. And that's generally true. An animal gets infected and may not ever show clinical signs, yet have a lot of disease inside its body and be effective spreaders of the disease. It's primarily a respiratory disease, but it can infecting the lungs, but it can also involve the bone and other organs. When we had higher TB in cattle in this country and there was more M. bovis in cattle, children with hunchbacks would often be. We don't see that much in this country. If you go to Central America, you still see children with hunchbacks. And that was caused because of infection with probably bovine TB that affected their spinal cord and caused them to hunch over. One of the things there's no vaccine for animals, unfortunately. There is a vaccine for humans. We don't use it in this country, but in countries that have a higher prevalence of tuberculosis, people are often vaccinated for TB because it's not a case of if they'll become exposed to the disease. It's more of a situation when. And the vaccine is, in humans, doesn't do a very good job of preventing infection, but it does a good job of preventing people getting clinical disease from it. The reason we don't have one for animals is that the vaccine, when given to animals, will cause the animals to react to the test. So you can't tell the difference in animals if it's due to having disease or if it's due to having because they were vaccinated. Okay. One of the things, I've got quite a few slides, and I know I'm the only person standing between you and lunch, so I need to move on through. Basically, the transmission then of TB in cattle is primarily animal-to-animal spread, mainly through the air. An animal has it in their lungs. They sneeze, they cough, they have what they call droplet nuclei containing the organism that causes TB, and another animal that's close by inhales that and gets the infection. It can also be spread orally through contaminated feed, water, and milk as possible. Certainly, cows with an infection of TB are likely spreading the milk, and their calves have a good chance of picking it up through the milk there. One thing about TB, it requires close contact with infected individuals or a contaminated area, meaning TB usually doesn't spread between animals by just casual contact. It spreads in a herd of cows because of repeated contact. They're always together as a herd there. A lot of times we have adjacent pastures that of cattle next to an infected herd, and we'll test those animals and not find infection in them. And that's largely because if the fences are up, you don't have a lot of commingling going on, you don't have repeated contact between the animals, which is good. The disease is enhanced, obviously, by crowding and stress. Therefore, we often see, in dairies that have a large number of cows, we often see the disease get to be a higher prevalence in those versus, say, sometimes range herds, beef herds, where there's less crowding in there. Wildlife reservoirs, we don't have, as a whole, we don't have any wildlife reservoirs of this disease in the United States. However, except for mainly one area, and that's up in the upper part of the Lower Peninsula in Minnesota, where it is a reservoir in white-tailed deer, and it spills over into cattle. We did have a reservoir in Minnesota, but the game and fish people basically took the population of deer down to almost non-existent levels and were able to eliminate the reservoir in Minnesota, the best that they, from studies, have shown. I'll show you a little picture there. This is what TB looks like in a cow. Basically, it's described as what we call these tubercles there, or granulomas. They can either be in the lymph nodes, or they can be actually there. You can see it's actually in the lung. And I don't think it takes a rocket science to figure out that when you have an animal like that in your herd, they're probably coughing up, every time they breathe, millions and millions of organisms, and can very quickly infect other cattle in the herd. One thing about TB, a lot of times in a herd, there are not many infected animals in a herd. However, those that are infected and have disease like that, they're very effective at spreading the disease and disseminating the disease to other animals in the herd. So these are what we call effective spreaders of the disease. A lot of times there's not a lot of those in the herd, but it only takes one of those to really contaminate your herd very quickly. The onset is often correlated with exposure dose, meaning a lot of times on herds that have a cow like I showed before that really is spreading the disease, then all of a sudden, once you test that herd, you find infection that's really been exposed to a lot of a disease. It's very rapidly is disseminated through the herd. I mentioned before it affects the respiratory tract and lymph nodes, and its disseminated infection is often rare, and it often occurs late in the disease progression. Course is chronic, progresses often over several years. You may have a herd with infected and not see any ill effect on your herd health whatsoever, but that disease is spreading in that herd, and then all of a sudden you have a few cows that are go to slaughter and they're full of the disease. And you know, when they left the herd, they looked fine, but then you go back and test the herd and you find out it really has just over years has just progressed and really exploded. Latent infections are often possible, and they may become active infections if the immune system is impaired, meaning that sometimes these cows can lay with the disease and have it for years, and they don't really spreading the disease at that point. They seem to have it contained. They aren't really a risk to the rest of the cows in the herd, but once some other stress happens, they get older, all of a sudden they become active spreaders, and it just blows up at that point. So they, something that might affect the immune system allows that disease to spread in that animal. Diagnosis, basically, many of you know about, it's a skin test, basically an old test. It's not the best test in the world, but it seems to still be the best test that we have today. Tuberculin is injected at the base of the tail, which is called the caudal fold area, and that's used for initial screening. We inject tuberculin, a veterinarian does, and then they come back in 3 days to read it, and they're feeling for a response, maybe some type of a lump. And just because a lump is small or the lump is great big really makes no difference. Some cows I've seen have large responses, and they have a lot of disease. There's some cows I've seen very minimal responses, and they have a lot of disease. So that's the problem with I guess you say here the skin test is a good test, but it's not 100% of finding every infected animal. At best, it's only 85% what we call sensitive in being able to find infected animals. Therefore, you have about 15% of animals that may be infected don't respond to the test. So if we have a herd that we're trying to clean up, that's the reason for repeated testing, is to catch those animals that are incubating the disease and haven't had a chance yet to respond to the disease. Unfortunately, even with that, some cases you don't catch them all. There's some cows what we call anergic, meaning that they have a lot of disease, but they just don't respond to the test whatsoever. That's the reason that on the final stages of the eradication program, the best thing to truly get rid of the disease of a herd is eradicate all the animals, depopulate all the animals, because then you don't miss an infected animals, which will later, after you think it's clean, come back and reinfect the herd, and you start all over again there. So what's often done then in the field is when you have a TB test done by your veterinarian, and they report responses. And just because they have a response doesn't mean that you have TB at that point. All it means is the animal responded to the test. You don't know why it did. There's other reasons animals can falsely respond to the test. And so we do another test called a comparative cervical test, which is done on the side of the neck, as you can see in the bottom here, which injects an avian tuberculin and a bovine tuberculin, and you read the differences in responses. That test is used to make a better decision whether or not the response you're seeing on the tail is more likely due because of infection with TB or if it's because of other causes of false positive sensitivity on the test. It's worked pretty good for us in this country. However, if it responds then to the comparative test, we take those animals to necropsy and really look for the disease, lesions of the disease itself, by histology of the lymph nodes, and we're looking for acid-fast organisms there. In the laboratory, they also run a PCR test, and they also do culture. It's slow-growing, so that's a lot of times why on the culture it takes a while to get your final result. But technology today with the PCR, we know within a few days whether it's we're really dealing with bovine TB or if it's
or if the animal is infected with something else.
Okay, risk factors. Basically, the main risk factors I have, certainly for us in Wyoming, we consider Mexican cattle. We get, United States brings in about 1 million steers a year for feeding that most of those go out in grazing. And I remember back in, 93, we had 693 cases of bovine TB found on our kill floors in fed cattle. And most of those were all cattle from Mexico that we found with disease. Basically, actually, through the efforts of NCBA, producers talking to producers here, talking to producers in Mexico, saying, we want your cattle, but we want clean cattle. Mexico has responded pretty well since that time, where today we only get 5 to 6 cases in fed cattle a year because of that. But obviously back in 93, we were really worried about when those cattle go to grass, you know, the potential of real exposing our herd. So the good news is that we're not getting the infected cattle from Mexico like we used to be, which is good. However, there's one group of cattle, which I consider at higher risk than that, and that's in roping cattle. Many times we get about 10,000 steers in a year, most of them coming out of Chihuahua, and they come in with a negative TB test. They come in with a negative TB test. However, as I've already said, not all of them that are infected always respond. So occasionally we will see on our kill floors cattle, steers, with TB, and when we do the epidemiology to find out, well, this was a steer that was previously a roping steer, and then it was a dogging steer, etc., and then somebody threw it in a feedlot and finally went to slaughter. We'll trace that, and we'll find some TB in those. And my own experience, some of those have been wrecks at times. So I guess the take-home message is, and that's why many states have requirements to have additional testing moving interstate on roping cattle, recreational cattle. And as you all know, a lot of those, they may have steers. There could be even domestic bucking bulls with them. We've had cases in bucking bulls, probably got it because they were mixed with Mexican roping steers at some point in the whole system. So rodeo cattle can be a risk. One of the things I guess my own take-home message, maybe to say to this group, is if you have roping cattle, fine. Don't put them with your, over the non-roping season, don't feed them with your replacement heifers. I've seen some real wrecks happen where, before in my career, where you have a case of a old roping steer. Well, it was end of the season. They threw it in with the replacement heifers, and it infected all the replacement heifers that the man had at the same time. Okay, right. Basically, dairy cattle, we do have some restrictions on dairy cattle. For the last several years, we continue having in the United States some infections in large dairy herds in the southwest, in West Texas, New Mexico, California, and some of those. And those are, you often hear it, well, it's got a disease in dairy cattle, and that's true. We often have some, one or two new infected large dairy herds in the United States infected with the disease. So that's some of the risk factors. Basically, signs, often no signs of TB. I've seen, you know, very fleshy first calf heifers just full of tuberculosis there, and you say, this animal doesn't look diseased to me. So a lot of times it's not until they get to a very advanced stage of the disease where you start seeing some of these emaciated cows, weakness, bronchopneumonias, things like that. Usually we don't see those in this country because we cull cattle out of our herds more frequently before such time they get to that period. But they don't have to be that stage. As I said before, they can just have a lot of lesions and be effectively spreading the disease. TB in the United States, as I've already said, it's basically been eliminated from most of the, when we look at the national livestock population, your risk from a whole thing of getting TB is pretty low because it's not there very much. But if you're the unfortunate person that happens to buy some exposed heifers from a infected animal, from an infected herd, which they don't know it's infected at the time you bought it, then obviously that's where you have at risk. As I mentioned, total eradication is still elusive, and we sporadically detect it. And it continues to be a threat due to potential exposure of infected wildlife. That's only in Michigan. Good news is we have a reservoir in Michigan in white-tailed deer. There's been no evidence. We've recognized that since 98, and it's never spread out of Michigan. And we can tell that because all the new outbreaks, it has a distinct DNA profile, and it's never been found outside the state. That's good, except for one case in Wisconsin about 10 years ago. But that's the good news there. They seem to be able to contain it right within that state. I mentioned there cattle potentially imported from Mexico, exposed dairy cattle. TB in Wyoming. So far, we haven't had a case of TB in Wyoming for years and years. However, we have recently had some traces from some infected herds. And unfortunately, there's been a couple herds in the last few years. Last year was a herd found in northwestern South Dakota, which had some reports from South Dakota that perhaps one of the ways it got infected was the purchases of some replacement heifer from Wyoming. So I got the call, and we went up and tested that herd in Wyoming, and we found no infection. Even though he had sold animals out of that herd that ended up in the infected herd in South Dakota and it had lesions, we didn't find the infection in Wyoming in that herd. So those animals that were Wyoming origin obviously caught it while they were, you know, they were in that herd for many years, several years, and so they caught it while it was in South Dakota. So the herd in the trace in investigation, we were not determined to be the source of infection. However, we traced 86 heifers from the herd in South Dakota, which were legally imported into Wyoming before infection was found in the herd in South Dakota. 16 had gone to slaughter. 30 were subsequently exported to buyers in Colorado, Nebraska, and Montana. And those states were notified, and they conducted their own investigations and basically were able to locate most of those 30, took them to slaughter, and didn't find any disease in them, which was good news. And also, those still in Wyoming were tested, and I should say were either depopulated with federal indemnity or we found them negative. So from that herd last year that was found in northwestern South Dakota, the good news for us in Wyoming, we did a lot of investigation, and we weren't able to find infection in any of those animals that were exposed at this point. Basically, recently, there's also then South Dakota has recently, just within the last month or so, found another herd up in Tripp County, which is a herd of about 300 cows there. This herd reportedly has been a closed herd except for the purchase of bulls. They're still doing their epidemiology, meaning trying to, and here in Wyoming, we haven't got notification we've received any of those cattle, but hopefully, knock on wood, we won't. But they're still doing their investigation and right at this point to find out where did they sell animals before that herd was found infection. And then they're also trying to determine where that infection came from in South Dakota. Unfortunately, the herd in South Dakota that was found in northwestern South Dakota and this herd are completely, appears to be different sources because the DNA profiles of the organism do not match, type of thing. So right now I could say, you know, South Dakota doesn't know where that herd got infection at this point. And I probably say right now for you know, there since that investigation is still going. So what can you do as a producer? I guess my own self, if I was buying cattle from replacement cattle from South Dakota, I'd probably have them tested before they came in. If whether Wyoming required a test or not, or another state required a test, my recommendation, because they don't know exactly at this point where it came from or the extent of it, of the infection. Obviously, I don't think it's all over South Dakota, but still they've had two herds here now, and they don't know the source of those infections, and the profiles are different. So that's a reason of concern there. Impacts to other states, I think I've hit on that. Sometimes states will impose interstate movement requirements with TBs found. I don't know of anybody yet, state, that has imposed interstate requirements on movement of cattle, breeding cattle, certainly from South Dakota. But I know that certainly here in Wyoming, we will be discussing it with our livestock board about do we need to or do we not at this point. Importation of cattle into our state, we want to protect our free status and protect our producers here in Wyoming. So, and we just basically will need to talk with our livestock board to see, you know, do we need, or in other states I'm sure are discussing too, since they haven't found that they've had two infections, do we need to impose testing requirements on, certainly at least on breeding cattle coming into those states. Rodeo, certainly on rodeo import requirements, I think I talked about that here in Wyoming. We have a health certificate is required to bring rodeo livestock, recreational cattle, and a permit number. And we also have a negative TB test within 12 months prior to entry. And most of our states have that on recreational cattle. We also have a requirement for a health certificate permit for breeding cattle, dairy cattle, breeding, and over 6 months of age are required to be TB tested within 60 days prior to import. How to reduce risk? Obviously, I think, you know, keep a closed herd the best that you can. I think I mentioned this there. You know, if you're buying cattle, I would say the best thing, and buying replacement, however, know your source. I think you've all heard that before, know your source. If you're buying put-together groups of heifers that you really don't know the source of those, your risk increases. Whereas if you know your source, where they're coming from, then your risk level goes down there. As I've already probably mentioned, I'll probably hear it from South Dakota State Veterinarian here soon, that, well, Bob, you were at a seminar there recommending that we test breeding cattle coming into Wyoming. Yes, I am right now until it concerns me right now until they get a complete handle on where that infection came from. As working with Livestock Board here in Wyoming, I think we need to, you know, at least advise our producer if you're buying replacement cattle from South Dakota at this point, request yourself a TB test on them. You know, and don't wait necessarily for state regulations to have to come in and say that it's important to do that. Okay. Test animals, isolate those for 60 days, and if it's possible, retest before commingling with your herd. Even though I guess what I'm saying is you say you get a negative test from some conducted by a certain veterinarian or somebody in another state, maybe you want your, if you're here in Wyoming, want your own veterinarian to give you just an added reassurance test once they get there, that can be done. Okay, there, traceability. I think everybody knows about traceability is a key. I'm not going to certainly get into discussion about the pros and cons of identification or that, but you know, a lot of times on our investigations, the main way we find TB in this country nationwide is the first indication a herd has it. We find it that when cull cows go to slaughter, state and federal meat inspectors, they're looking. That's why they're incising lymph nodes. They're not only for other diseases, but they're also looking for TB. When they see a lesion or something there in a cow, they take samples and they send it to the lab. If it comes back positive, that's where the state and federal officials in the state will start investigating that. Obviously, the better the ID on that animal that's given, whether it be a you know, a hard official ID, a Bang's tag, or whether it be even a brand type of thing, that's going to improve the traceability. So in this country, that's how that herd was found. Both herds were found in South Dakota. It was traced back of an old cow, was culled out of the herd, went through a livestock market, had a back tag applied, probably had a Bang's tag too. That last one in South Dakota did have its Bang's tag still, able to trace back to the herd of origin. So obviously, the better, the more tools you have to be able to trace animals, the better success we have. And we don't find in the United States, we don't find the home for every animal killed at slaughter that has TB. There's an investigation done. But we don't find 100% of those, a home for each one of those. Each year we find two or three, one or two, sometimes three cases of TB in a cow at slaughter that can't be traced to herd of origin. So you got an infection somewhere. Okay, so the dinner's getting cold. I'll wind this up pretty quick. Official ID is important. I talked about that. You've heard that. Basically, I've talked about protecting the food chain. That's why animals are inspected at slaughter to make sure that animals with TB do not enter the food chain, etc. there. What if you're involved in a TB trace? Say, for instance, you're in Wyoming. I got a, we had information that so-and-so received exposed animals. You're probably going to get quarantined until we have a chance to go out and either locate the exposed animals to that there and then test the balance of your herd. And basically, there is a option to try to test out the herd if you found to be infected. However, like I say, a lot of producers, especially in beef, you know, have to bite the bullet. It's not easy, but sometimes have to, if we can come up with the money to depopulate the herd, they elect to go that route because they want to be done. They don't want to go to an extended testing period that might last over several years and have restrictions on the animals they're trying to sell. Okay, so I'll just end it up with that pretty quick. And I guess take a few questions and